Welcome to the Innerside Radio Program, recorded October 18th on Pacifica Radio in Houston with myself and Glenn Urbach. Live in the studio with Mike Aus, former pastor for 20 years, who came out as an atheist this year, Donald Wright, atheist and former deacon in the African American Church, and Natalie, former fundamentalist, all of whom are active in Houston's Oasis Free Thought community.
Well, we have some guests here tonight that I want to introduce at Scooter Step for us. They are from the Houston Oasis Free Thought community. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Which is another way, and it's a nice way to say it, we're surrounded by atheists tonight.
That's right. 100%.
You know, your 100%. You need to turn up your mic a little.
I know. Oh, whoa.
So I want to welcome Natalie. I want to welcome Donald. I want to welcome Mike to the show. Everyone, thank y'all for coming. Thank you.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Now, who was the first one kicked out of their family?
Let me tell you how Mike came out first. This is good. Because I actually heard this after we were talking, that I met you and talked to you. But you came out publicly as an atheist who used to be a pastor on MSNBC.
Yes.
screwing around in the middle.
Wait, say it again. You used to be a pastor who came out as an atheist.
On MSNBC.
On MSNBC.
What show was that?
Chris Hayes, up with Chris Hayes.
You were on that show.
Yes, I was.
Now, what? But
can you imagine, like, all of the congregation's going, oh, Pastor Mike's going to be on the TV tonight. And then, you know, everybody's setting up their TiVo, and then all of a sudden, surprise!
I gave them a little heads up that they weren't going to like what I had to say.
That was total balls.
But you were a pastor. You're an atheist now.
Yeah, exactly. Atheist, militant agnostic, something like that. Yeah.
Fine, fair enough. Now, tell us about the journey. I mean, how did you go from being a pastor, a man of God, a follower in the teachings of Jesus H. Christ, to being a godless communist? How do you make that transition?
Oh, we haven't got him to commie yet.
Oh,
we're working
on it.
Yeah, coming to KPFC is the first step.
We're on the air
until
11 p.m.
That's the first step.
Trust me, no time. So anyway, so how does someone go from that world that look, it wasn't just, a conversion of your faith. This was your livelihood. This is how this is how you paid the mortgage,
right,
by being
a
pastor.
Yeah.
So walk us through, I mean, how did the change happen? I mean, how did you start questioning it?
You know, for me, it was just real gradual. It was just, stuff, you just noticed too many things not adding up over time. It started for me actually with the Bible. You start reading the Bible too much. And that's the thing, is if you actually read the Bible,
right,
it's going to cause a lot of problems. And that is the dirty little secret of religion, is that most people out there, really don't read and get into the Bible. I mean, they might read a few verses for a morning devotional or something like that. But, people really don't spend time in the Bible. When you start looking at, for me, it was the inconsistencies, the exaggerations, the fabrications, and then the outright brutality of so much of it. And that's where it started for me. And that led to more questions, and started reading more about science and how humanity actually came to be here, and just too many things didn't add up, and I just reached a breaking point.
Mike, is it safe to say that the seeds of non-belief are planted as early as seminary school, when you start studying the Bible and how it seems to emerge as more of a historical political document?
Oh, absolutely. I think, it really does lay the groundwork. And you're right, because there you find out how the Bible was shaped by the geopolitical facts on the ground, and it is how evolved as any other human document evolves. And if you get into it at all, you start seeing the textual problems with the original languages. Sure.
Well, give us a good juicy example of the inconsistency that just really grabbed your attention.
Oh, well, one would be, and for Christians, for many Christians, communion, the Mass, the Eucharist is like the central sacrament, the central ceremony of the faith.
And it's not the blood of Christ.
Well, in John chapter 6 is where Jesus says, you need to eat my body and drink my blood. He goes on this big long deal in John chapter 6 about this. But in Leviticus, back in the Old Testament, in Leviticus 17, and I think also in Leviticus 7, one of the fundamental prohibitions for Jews was never consume any blood. I mean, don't even eat rare roast beef,
right.
You know. And for Jesus, who was an observant Jew, to go on and on and on about drinking my blood just makes no sense at all. Well, it became clear to me also through other reading that that whole notion of consuming the body of a divinity came in through the Roman mystery cults. It was something that got tacked on. It didn't originate in the Old Testament. But, you know, that's flat out. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There, you know, just too many problems to mention.
How do you like your steak, Glenn?
I like it bloody rare.
Oh, there you go.
Only way to go.
A fallen Jew.
That's right. I like my crosses crucified.
That's it.
Let's turn over to Donald. Now, Donald, you are an atheist as well.
Yes.
And you know, I'll tell the listeners, you're an African-American man, and I know, particularly in the African-American community, church is like sacrosanct. I mean, it is like right up there.
Oh, right? It is like breathing in the black community.
Why is religion so in the African American community so paramount?
It is a pretty interesting cultural experience. The idea that black people, African Americans, are a lot more, it appears to be a lot more committed to religion and Christianity.
I mean, is that the house you grew up in?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, my transition away from it basically occurred about 8 years ago. And so the idea of me moving away from it, the transition basically started when I was trying to reinforce my religious faith, my Christianity, my walk with Jesus. So I was trying to reinforce that, to solidify it, and to become deeper into it.
Right.
But getting back to your original question, though, in terms of how it, in regards to the community, the black community, I have to say that it that's a slavery issue. The idea that African Americans brought to this country, introduced to Christianity, taught only religion. We weren't given the opportunity to read other books.
Right.
And we weren't really given the opportunity to read the Bible. But we were taught from the Bible.
Right.
So you can learn how to quote, you can learn how to recite, you can learn how to repeat things. And then some of those things, based on my understanding, is that it was an easy thing to adapt to.
Right.
And to adhere to.
Well, that makes sense, because in that time, even post-slavery, there was no educational system for African Americans. There was none.
Right, right.
And so the only book was the Bible, and the only school was the church.
But I mean, there were free slaves. I mean, free blacks.
Right.
So there were some that were getting some education.
Right, but not to the level of their white counterparts.
Exactly. Right. Right. But one thing about that is the transition out of slavery was something that blacks could move into this free society, so-called, and have nothing but religion.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing that they could call their own.
Right.
So it became an item. It became that possession. And so it just moved with us throughout the years. And so now, it's more of a community activity. It's more of a way that you really identify within the culture.
Right.
It's a little bit disconcerting, but I think one of the most important things to recognize is that once you get involved in the secular community and start talking to people, that this aspect of blacks being really religious, with us being such a small percentage of the community, then a lot of the things that kind of takes on its own identity or definition within the black community become more pronounced. So,
do you think overall the church, I say the church, is more of a hindrance to African American community, or it's something that's needed?
Well, now I think religion is a hindrance to everybody. I think religion ought to be eliminated.
Wow. I mean,
that's my take.
Now, how did you come to this? I mean, you said 8 years ago you've made that change. I mean, what happened 8 years ago?
Well,
was it a lot more like, you know, a lot more research into the Bible and realizing
it's very similar to Mike's experience,
right?
But the difference is that I was wanting to move into a deeper, committed, more understanding, because I wanted to try to really...
Of Christianity.
Of Christianity, right. Right. I was a little bit baffled in terms of how often I was experiencing the inappropriate behaviors from pastors or preachers. So I wanted to understand why that can happen, but the members didn't seem to want to hold them accountable for that. So I was curious, but maybe it was something in the Bible I was missing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to find that out. So I started studying it to try to be more knowledgeable, more committed to it. And I spent that time, and within 2 years, I had studied my way out of it.
That's what happens when you read the Bible.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the thing. So
and Gideon was an atheist, probably.
But I think what I transitioned to is I moved into understanding some things differently from what I had been taught as a Christian. Yeah. And so I think one of the first thing that was the most amazing thing to me is how I was able to learn distinguishing characteristics that differentiated Paul from Jesus. Then I saw that, boy, they don't teach us that.
Right.
They teach us more about Paul than they do Jesus. Mm. And I think it's a reason for it.
Right.
Because they don't want to adhere to the teachings of Jesus.
Right.
Not in its totality.
Correct.
So they can avoid it. Paul gives you an out for just about everything.
Right.
So it becomes that easy religion when you follow Paul.
Okay. Being our female atheist, mm-hmm. Now tell us how you came about to choose atheism.
Well, I lived my whole life with doubt. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the church. I was told by more than one person in the church that the reason I was doubting was because I was chosen. And the Lord had special plans for me, and Satan was putting these doubts in my mind. So anytime I had these doubts, that was verifying that the Lord existed, because Satan was putting the doubts in my head and was trying to pull me away from God, which is crazy. So I struggled throughout my adulthood. I tried very hard to become a really good Christian, and would push away these thoughts and try to immerse myself in the spiritual side, the good feeling side, the singing and the music and the praise and worship. And I had kids and decided I was going to be a good Christian mother and indoctrinate my children the way you're supposed to. And I started playing the Bible for my daughter when we were eat lunch. And she would sit there. She's about 6 years old. And we were listening to the Old Testament and the story of Lot specifically. And if you know anything about that story, you're like, really? You let a six-year-old listen to the story of Lot? You know, it's just a little bit kind of over the top. But so she's listening to it. And all of a sudden she just looks up at me and she goes, Mom, I just don't believe this can be true. And I just looked at her and I said, you know, honey, I don't either.
The snuff porn wouldn't work on the six-year-old.
Exactly.
Right.
She's like a pillar of salt. Really?
Yeah. Well,
I have to say, Donald, that I lived out in Oakland for many, many years. And a lot of times on Sunday mornings, if we'd been up all night Saturday, we'd ride our motorcycles over to this church on MacArthur Avenue. It was an old movie theater. And they had, it was one of those rock and roll black churches, you know, where they have a funk band, and then the guy, you know, kind of like the James Brown bit and the Blues Brothers?
Right.
That's exactly what it was. It was awesome. We can't sustain it. That's got to be the hardest church to walk away from, because a lot of those things are really fun. it's not that stickly old sitting around listening to something, they're rocking out, you know. We used to do that all the time, so that's a fun church. But, and also, you know, those pastors, especially those real charismatic guys, they're like total womenizers. And they don't like hide it at all, do they?
Oh, quite a few of them have this tendency of being, I'm the man, so I can kind of do what I want to do.
Right.
So just keep bringing your money.
To me, you know, what drives me to be a non-believer is my belief in the Big Bang Theory. Doesn't that kind of negate religion?
Pretty much.
If
you believe in the Big Bang Theory and it's completely supported by science, and the evolutionary process that stemmed from the Big Bang Theory and all the elements that were created, and then the sun and the earth and the moon, to me, it negates all of. I don't care if it's the Bible, the Torah, the Quran. It's all negated.
Evolution itself really kind of, like you said, negates almost every fundamental Christian doctrine.
The specialness of humans.
If Jesus is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of all humanity, well, does that include all hominid species, like Homo erectus? I mean, where was the soul inserted in the evolutionary process?
And really, the story of Christianity has been repeated in other forms of religion.
Absolutely.
The chosen one, the virgin birth.
Right.
I don't know why Christianity kind of took hold and it stayed that way.
The Romans.
Yeah. Politics.
Possibly. or we might be looking at something else down the road. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Let's face it. There's not going to be any more new religions.
I doubt it. I think the wheels are coming off the bus, really.
Right. I hope so. Yeah.
The latest Pew Research numbers out just last week or so showed that the rate of people...
Non-believers.
It's like accelerating.
20% or something?
Yeah, and it's amazing. I am very proud of my kids. They are very proud of themselves for being non-believers. They don't hide it from their friends. I've discussed with them the ramifications of letting it be known that they're non-believers, and are they willing to put themselves out socially that way and be rejected by their peers, especially in junior high and high school. But they are very secure in how they've chosen to live, and to me, that's hope.
See, I grew up, we never talked about religion. Never. I mean, me and my friend, we were drunk and stoned most of the time.
Right.
I'm not saying for your daughter to follow that footstep. So she does. You do have that going for you.
Talking about the Big Bang all the way back then. Wow, look at those stars.
But they're
like Adam.
But really, I mean, I say this since, I mean, I don't know when. Will it be 200 years, 100 years, 300 years? I mean, religion in all forms is going to die.
Yeah, I think the metaphysical claims clearly can't be sustained. But getting back to something Donald said about the Black Church, the power of the church in that community, I think it's really, to the extent that the religious experience works, it works because of community, not because of metaphysics, not because prayer is working, because it obviously doesn't work. I mean, I prayed. That was another bummer for me. As a preacher, you'd go and pray with sick people all the time,
and they'd
still die, you know? And this is clearly, not working. And
so you're saying is the church is now taking more of a social role in people's lives,
I think
more
it
than the teaching.
I think it almost always has.
Yeah.
I think it almost always has.
But I guess what I'm saying, let me rephrase it, that would be its saving grace at this point.
And I think it's going to morph. And in fact, this, one reason we've started this new group, Houston Oasis, because since I came out publicly, I've been approached by Christians who said, I never really believed this either. But we kind of like getting together. We kind of like having, an inspiring message. We like community. We like doing service projects. Is there a way we can kind of hang on to the stuff that we liked, but we don't have to believe the crazy stuff? We don't have to believe the fairy tales and all that. And so I think there is power in
human community. What do you say to them when they ask you that?
I said, let's give it a shot. Let's try something.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, at our Houston Oasis, we meet every Sunday morning. We've got music. We have community. People get up and speak. Mike gives a message. He's been talking a lot about oxytocin, the effects on the brain. There's been a lot of hugging going on.
Right.
We're having a baby shower for one of our members this Sunday. We're doing all of the things that we would get in that community.
That community environment that churches and synagogues do, but not bring in God and Jesus.
No metaphysical claims at all.
Right. And Donald has some great dreams for us, to go forward to help the Houston community.
And that's the, that's to build a community where we actually reach out to the community and provide service and things that the community needs, and which are some of the things that the church offers. But what I've learned is that of an individual that makes you want to do that. And so you don't have to hide or use religion as an excuse to do it. you can do it just because you want to do it, because you know it's right to do that. But going back to the idea about science and the role it's playing, it's a paradox, because I fell in love with math and science at an early age. I'm an engineer. But as I was diving deep into that, being convicted by it, I was still convicted by church also. So I'm learning science every day.
Right.
But I'm doing church on Sunday.
Right, and there's a conflict.
But I didn't realize it. I didn't see it to be a conflict.
Right.
I saw it as a means of existence, because I had obviously bought into the belief.
Right.
And that is, this is what you do. And if you become primarily concerned about what happens in the afterlife, which is some other things that you learn differently, once you give yourself the opportunity to learn something other than religion, that life is this. This is what we have to deal with. But it is an interesting challenge from being a scientist or someone like that, but still practice religion.
Well, let me ask you all this in terms of the people you've talked to. How much do you think the fear of heaven and hell keeps people in the church?
Pascal's wager. Right there. I mean, some people say, well, what's the big deal? You know, you should probably go ahead and believe, because if you believe,
right,
then at least, you know, you'll get to go to heaven when you die.
But then you're not really believing.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
but
also,
there are people that do that, because they're fear of hell.
And also, there's the 1,000 other things that you could be believing in. So you still have 999 chances of going to hell anyway.
Well, you know, even within Christianity.
You could be the wrong God.
You know, if Christians can't even agree among themselves on what God is like. I mean, the Catholic version of a God is different from the mainline Protestant, different from the evangelical. I mean, these different gods can't be reconciled, much less, like you said, Scooter, you know, the thousands of other options that are out there. But I get back to what you were asking about, you know, I think the hell thing is huge, but for me personally, that was like one of the first doctrines I threw out, because I could not get my head around, you know, it's like, God is love, you know, Jesus loves me, this I know. Well, if he's such a sweet, loving guy, then how on earth could he ever, you know, torture people for all eternity? I mean, that was like one of the very first doctrines for me that just I could not get.
That confuses a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things that was interesting for me, though, is the fact that once I was able to discard the Bible, eliminate its authenticity, its relevance, its divinity, and its so-called power in God's word, then I could discard all of the concepts. So if I no longer think this thing is legitimate, then the messages from it have been displaced,
right,
also.
Right.
So there goes heaven, there goes hell.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to understand, I think the numbers of we'll just call them non-believers, not atheists or agnostics, mm-hmm, just non-believers.
Yeah. Right.
I think that number would go up, I'm not saying double, let's say it's 20% now, would go up if people didn't hold that one belief. That's the one thing I'm holding on. I don't like going to church, I don't really talk about it, but I do it because I know about this heaven and hell. I'm not risking it.
You know, when I finally, it was a gradual process, but that was one of the, I remember the day, actually, that I thought about, oh my gosh, when I die, that's it. You know, when I really realized, wow, there isn't a heaven. And I stepped back for a moment and I thought, well, what was life like before I was born? Hey, wasn't so bad.
Right.
You know, so it's you know, and just letting go of that. And then the trees were greener, the sky was bluer. I live life now. I'm not waiting for something to get better after I suffer in a hospital for, you know, cancer or whatever until I die and get some reward.
Yeah, death is a place where you don't have to get up and go to work in the morning.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Bad. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
He's complaining about that.
But I agree that heaven and hell is a major component of this.
Big time.
And
mm-hmm.
So as I'm talking to people, and I really enjoy talking to people now about this. In fact, I look forward to talking to people about it. So in my conversation with Christians, the challenge is the heaven and the hell, and which one has the greatest value. So the heaven being the reward and the hell being the punishment.
Right.
Well, I contend that there is more of the hell message of punishment that keeps people in line.
Oh,
because the Bible in itself has more focus on hell than it does heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you were going to ask someone, just from the Bible, give me all the scriptures that talk about heaven, and then give me all the ones that talk about hell, hell is going to have more.
Right.
Yeah. And so with that aspect, I think that's the fear mechanism.
Yeah. I'm pale skinned. I can't do hell.
Seriously, the descriptions of heaven are really limited, and it's all very vague. They talk a lot about glory and things. I'm like, what is glory anyway? I don't even know what that word. That's what is that?
Right.
And everybody gets to praise, and yeah, it sounds just
sounds like going to church.
I know, right? I like the sexy Muslim heaven.
But they never tell you what kind of virgins. They could be goats.
Hold the virgins. Give us some experienced women.
I was drunk in college once. Let's talk about something else, and going back to the evolutionary process, regardless of what religion you're referring to, but let's talk about Christianity. Isn't the formation of religion and the establishment, that was part of the evolutionary process of man?
Absolutely. Yeah,
it makes sense why at one point you had religion, because you had one, you had organized societies, and two, people were curious. I mean, to me, religion was born out of curiosity. How do we get here? Why is the sky blue and the grass green? And what happens when we die? And where do we go? And to me, when you look at religion in the evolutionary process, it had its place. But now with science, it really should be like, okay, you know, we've evolved.
And, it's a vestige.
Right. We were wrong, but it served its purpose at one time.
Right.
It seems like it's outlived its purpose.
I think so. I think you said it really well. In the ancestral environment, there's a lot of different theories about what role religion may have played. You know, and it probably evolved out of, like, primitive burial rituals. And then, religion also provided the myths of the tribe that gave it a sense of identity and place in the world. And theories that tribes that had the stronger religion were more cohesive, were more willing to sacrifice and die for the tribe, that gave you a survival advantage over other tribes that didn't have such a strong religious mindset. You sacrifice and die for the tribe in battle, but you're going to go live with the ancestors. That's a good deal. So yeah, it all evolved. It's just like any other human behavior, there's this natural evolutionary process that went on. And that became clear to me, too, that, yeah, it wasn't, because, for Christianity, for Judaism, for Islam, it became clear to me that the ultimate claim now is that, well, it started with revelation. What was revelation? It's somebody heard a voice in their head. And if you hear a voice in your head and you can convince enough people that you heard a voice, you can start a religion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was part one of our discussion with Houston's Oasis Free Thought Community, Natalie, Donald Wright, and Mike Ouse. If you'd like to hear more from Mike Ouse, check out Skeptiles Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or skeptiles.com, episode number 8. Part two of the discussion with the Oasis folks coming up on the next Innerside Radio program. This and all previous Innerside Radio programs are on the internet. Simply Google The Innerside. My name's Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
Down with disease, 3 weeks in my bed, trying to stop these demons that keep dancing in my head.